Welcome to the Healing Trauma and CPTSD podcast. I'm your host, Monique Coven. I'm a certified trauma, recovery, and resilience coach, and this podcast is all about hope and recovery. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. On today's episode, I have with me Jill Whalen. And Jill Whalen is going to talk about her experience with anxiety. Now, Jill is not a trauma survivor, but she has experienced some change in relation to anxiety. And this conversation is helpful because we can start to see how much our thinking plays a role in our moment-to-moment experience. So I really hope that you enjoy this conversation.
Hi, Hello. Jill. Hello, Jill.
Can you hear me?
I sure can.
Oh, good.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm so glad you're here. So, Jill, we're going to talk a little bit today about your story. And also, you wrote a book, which I read and I really loved. It's called Victim of Thought, Seeing Through the Illusion of Anxiety. And I really enjoyed your book because it really resonated with me in my own experience of anxiety and understanding like where that comes from. So I would love to talk to you about your own experience and story. So can you tell us a little bit about your history with anxiety and what changed for you?
Sure. First, thanks for having me on. And Happy New Year.
Thank you. You too.
But so my story, I mean, I don't have like a dramatic story like some people do. I mean, I know, you know, you have a lot of your listeners have had a lot of major trauma in their lives and things like that. So my story is more kind of almost the average person. Like when I talk to people now, just regular people I happen to meet in life, you know, and if I mention I wrote a book on anxiety, they're like, oh my God, I've suffered from anxiety my whole life. It's like everybody. It's really interesting, which is an interesting facet of it all, because we don't realize everybody else is suffering from anxiety because we all just like think it's normal. And that was me in my life. I didn't even really know I had anxiety. I was never diagnosed with anything. I was shy. And people would kind of scare me as a kid, just in general, new stuff, you know, change of situation. There was a time in like first grade where I got afraid to go to school and I had stomach aches for I don't know how long. And, you know, so stuff like that, just kind of regular life stuff, anything that would disrupt my peace or seem to disrupt my peace would just, you know, I would just flip out or shut down or, you know, whatever would happen to me. But I just thought that was life. And in a way it kind of is for the average person. So I didn't think much about it. I mean, I went on to, you know, get married and have three kids and have a successful business and everything was great when I could do what I wanted. You know, my favorite things that seemed to give me peace, when things were going well with my marriage, that was great. You know, I had peace when my kids were healthy and doing well in school and everything. Then that was great. I had peace when I could sit at my computer all day doing what I wanted to do. That was great. I had peace. But then if somebody would say, I need you to do this thing, or, you know, someone was sick or whatever, it like, you know, seemed that totally disturbed my peace. So, I mean, that was kind of my background. You want me to go into then what happened?
Yeah, I mean, that sounds to me, I mean, I can relate. That's totally, and I think everybody can relate that, you know, when we kind of feel like things are going our way and there's no kind of threat to our, like you said, quote unquote, like peace, we just feel good. And then when something we think out there is disrupting it, we don't feel peace anymore. So yeah. So yeah, if you could continue just chatting about like, so what happened, what changed, and or how did it get to be where you saw it as a problem?
Yeah. So it was never really, I didn't ever see it as a problem, but it, I mean, at some point, so, I mean, I was about 50 at this point when I had a successful business, my own business, making lots of money. And, but I also was drinking a lot, just, you know, socially and, getting, I had gotten overweight, you know, as you tend to do, I think in general, as an older woman, not always, but you know, I just thought, oh, okay, that's normal too. But I was, you know, not eating healthy. I never really did. I didn't exercise much. And if I finally realized I needed to lose some weight. I mean, I kind of knew that for years, but I didn't do anything about it. I finally got to a point where I was like, okay, that's it. This is now I'm ready. And I just made that decision. I'm going to lose weight. I'm going to make it a lifestyle change. I didn't believe in dieting, or I had never really dieted. I was not, I had been, you know, fairly thin most of my life. So I always thought diets were silly. So I knew it would be a lifestyle change. I would just change the way I ate and I would start exercising more. I had already been going to yoga a little bit. I think a little bit, but not a lot, but at least I was doing something. So I lost weight just the usual way, you know, counting calories. I had a Fitbit and I had an app that would count the calories. So it kind of, for me, it was fun as a kind of techie person. It became a little game, you know, counting the calories and putting them, entering them into my thingy and all that stuff. And so I wanted to lose 25 pounds in 6 months. And I did, and it was easy for me. It just, you know, because I made that decision that I was going to do it. But the cool and interesting thing was that it was like I became a different person. And in this relatively short period of time of my life, 6 months, I went from someone who, you know, would scoff at vegetables and exercise and thinking that, you know, haha, I'm allergic to those, from being to that to someone who loved both those things, loving to just hike in the woods and cooking all kinds of healthy vegetables. And I kind of was like, that's really interesting, you know, and this was not conscious. This is sort of looking back on it. But I found it interesting, like, how can you be something for your whole life, 50 years of life, and then suddenly be this completely different person? And it kind of got me curious about our identity, like what is that? You know, what is this identity if it can shift like that? Like, I had sort of thought of it as a fixed, you know, solid chunk of something in the back of my head, and it obviously wasn't. So that's when I started kind of looking into stuff more, just getting curious and listening to psychological things online and spiritual stuff. And I stumbled upon Michael Neal, who I'm sure many people you've talked to and you yourself know of, listening to him, and I was like, wow, this guy's like a genius. I don't know what he's talking about, but there was something in what he was saying about thoughts and stuff that seemed really interesting to me. And so I sent like his recording to my husband because it sounded really like sciencey or something. And my husband loves science stuff. So I'm like, maybe he can kind of listen and he'll explain to me what he's saying in you know, easy to understand language. And so I sent it to my husband and he listened to it and I said, yeah, okay, so what did he say? And he goes, I think he's just saying, you know, thoughts create our feelings. And I'm like, I know, but what does that mean? And so we were both like real curious about that. We would listen to this one recording over and over. We didn't realize there were like hundreds of them, not as many back then as there are now, but, and each time I'd listen, like I'd get a little more of what he was saying. And then I finally kind of branched out and listened to some other people who, you know, he had mentioned or talked about that also talked about thoughts creating feelings. And it suddenly hit me one day when I heard another woman saying thoughts create feelings, but this time all of a sudden I got it, because the night before I had had this weird experience with my husband. I mean, it wasn't weird. Everyone, we have these experiences like all the time, or at least I did. But, you know, I had made some dinner and my husband was on his laptop. And I said, you know, okay, dinner's ready. And he said, okay, but he said, okay, in a way I didn't like. It sounded like he was mad at me, or I didn't know, but I had, and so I invented this whole story in my head. Oh no, what, he's mad. What did I do? He doesn't want to eat this. He wants to go out. Cause we tend to go out a lot. But at the time when I was eating so healthy, I was trying to cook more. And so I had this dinner, we ate dinner and it was like silent. And then he went out, which wasn't unusual, but like the whole night, I just was like, you know, what's going on? Why is he mad? And blah, 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 the whole night. So, and then I just realized I'm just going to calm down and play some games or something. And when he comes home, I'll just pretend like everything's fine and talk to him, which I did. And it was fine. But the next day when I heard thoughts create feelings, this whole story came back to me. And I was like, oh my God, that's exactly what I did. It was my thoughts that created that whole experience. My whole night was like, you know, it could have gone anyway. It was all in my head. I was living in my head that whole night, and with anxiety over it all. And then I really, you know, that was what we'd call an insight, because it was just like a flash of, oh, I get it. And so I heard it in a different way. And then when I could go back and listen to Michael Neal's things and other things, and, you know, when he said thoughts create feelings, I just understood it in a different way. And so then that really just led to other insights along the way, where my mind just was so much more quiet, where I realized that I had anxiety my whole life. Like that, like this big buzzing in my head was just kind of gone all of a sudden for, you know, no particular reason other than understanding like where my feelings come from. That's kind of the gist of it.
Yeah, and that was so helpful as part of my recovery from trauma, because I was really wondering why I was chronically feeling anxious. And I too started to really understand that I was really living and feeling my very own thinking every moment. And that, when I got it, I mean, we all kind of maybe know that a little bit kind of somewhere intellectually, but when we really get that, it's actually mind-blowing, because we realize that we're experiencing not what's happening outside, but the sensations and feelings are coming from our own response to those very thoughts that we're having. So, yeah, I can see that. And so wow, you know, here you are having that experience, losing weight, seeing that you're not like whatever you thought about yourself prior to losing weight. You're seeing that, oh, my identity can, I'm not this who I thought I was. And now you're starting to understand how thoughts kind of create our moment-to-moment experience. And so how did that, I mean, did that impact you in a, it must have, you wrote a book in a huge way.
Yeah, I mean, that was the like first insight. And then I went on to have some other insights that had even more impact. Like I had been listening to things about addiction. Well, I was listening to all stuff that was related to this, you know, this whole inside out understanding. Mm-hmm. And there were some ones about addiction. I think I was listening to like conference videos and stuff, but I kind of left the addiction ones to the end, because I'm like, I don't really care about addiction. It's not my, you know, I don't have addictions, I thought. and I didn't want to listen to them. It was probably my ego holding back, because it knew that would be the end of it, or take a chunk of it. But when I started listening to some of these ones on addiction, I was like, oh my God, like those ones actually were the most interesting to me, because I started to see how life was one big addiction. that we were like everything we do, all those things that I loved that seemed to give me peace. It was all to give me peace. It was all so I could feel peaceful because I thought all those things were what were giving me peace. All these mm-hmm. things outside, like mm-hmm. my computer, my family, mm-hmm. alcohol, anything that I love, best friends. That was one of my addictions was, and I knew that was an addiction, but like all through my life, I would have like one best girlfriend that I would just cling to. And that would be my addiction, one of my many addictions. But I started to see that more and more that that's what exactly what it was. And I realized, but wait a minute. And this was just a real quick, I sound like my whole life flashed before my eyes in the shower one day where I saw this string of addictions. I think I saw the friendships thing, but it applied everywhere where I saw, well, wait a second, if it's our thoughts that are creating our feelings and our whole experience, then the joke's on me because I was actually creating that peaceful, that happiness inside of me. It wasn't the other people because right. That's not what creates feelings. And so it was like this boom.
Yeah.
That I saw how the happiness has to be coming from me. And no matter what situation I'm in, theoretically, I could still be at peace. Now that doesn't mean I am, but theoretically you there's potential that we can be. And so more and more knowing that, like knowing it inside of me that's the way it works. It does, you know, then stuff outside me, there's no reason to have addictions. And really what was interesting, my insight had nothing to do with alcohol, but after that insight, I couldn't drink alcohol anymore. I could drink a drink, one drink, but I couldn't, I didn't want, or like the feeling of that buzz that I used to actually want from drinking. I was like, why waste the calories if I'm not going to get a buzz? I didn't want that buzzed feeling anymore. And to this day, I still don't. And that was probably 5 years ago when I had that insight. And I'll still have a glass of wine, you know, mm-hmm. Nights even, but I don't want to have enough to give me any kind of buzz. And that just happened. The insight didn't even have anything to do with that, but that was like a byproduct of it, which was really cool.
Oh, that is cool. I wonder if you could help listeners kind of understand, maybe, because I think it's important. Could you clarify what you mean when you say that I realize that those things out there, drugs, drinking, eating, expensive purchases, fun friends, that they were not the ones that were giving me peace. What do you mean by that? Help us understand that.
Sure. So like I said, if it's the peace, I mean, there's two ways to look at it. I also see that, you know, peace is our natural state. It's underneath all the thoughts that we have, you know, so the thoughts aren't us. And this is what's confusing because we just assume thoughts are us. You know, I mean, it sounds like us. It's been there in our head the whole time. It seems to be who we are. But this kind of goes along with that whole identity piece, right? If who is me? You know, who am I? Am I the overweight person who drinks and eats unhealthy? Or am I this new Jill who, you know, does the other things? And so when you realize that your thoughts aren't you, and that you don't really have to listen to them, underneath all that, what's left, right? What's left is this awareness part that can notice it all, not one of the other voices. Like we think one, for a long time, I thought, well, there's the good voice and the bad voice in my head, and the good voice is really who I am. But it's not even that. It's none of that. It's just the awareness of the voices. And that is peace right there. That's there with us all the time, this awareness of all the voices. And that's peace of mind. So it's not stuff outside of us, all the addictions. Like it's the peace of mind that's with us all the time. And that's sort of what I mean. It still can feel like, you know, when we do stuff we like, that feels like peace. But it's just because our thoughts are quieter when we're doing things we like. we're not, you know, we're not overthinking or whatever. We're just in the zone.
Yeah.
And we're in the flow.
And that's why, like I've often said, and, you know, people think that they go on vacation and they are sitting by the beach and they're like, ah, you know, the beach is making me feel so relaxed. When in reality, a beach doesn't have feelings in it. It is the fact that you have practically nothing on your mind now. You're in a relaxed state, and so you're feeling relaxed. And the feeling is actually coming from within you that's creating those nice feelings. And that's really incredible. And I think that's what you started to really see in a huge way.
Yeah, and it's accessible all the time. I mean, we walk around with that with us. Like, I mean, how cool is that? And the benefit is this is where the victim part comes along, the victim of thought. We're not a victim to other stuff. We kind of are a victim to thoughts if we believe that they're us. But we can't, you know, most of us go through life as robots being dragged along by whatever's happening outside of us. Mm-hmm. You know, this happens, that happens. I feel bad. This happens. I feel good. And like, how scary is that? No wonder we all walk around with so much anxiety, because that's scary as hell. At any moment, something horrible could happen that can take away our peace. And when we know at some level that that's just not how it works, you like, it's just, oh, thank God. I'm not just a robot that can be dragged along by life. Like, we're not dragged along by life as we thought we were. And again, this doesn't mean that I'm not, I mean, it's, you know, and all day long, I still get tricked all the time, even knowing what I know. It's still, you know, someone can say something to me and I can automatically go into conditioned thought, then I feel bad. But I, you know, I come out of it quicker or whatever. I don't question. I don't think it's a big deal if that happens. I don't, because that's another reason now that people will then beat up themselves after they learn stuff, is thinking that that's bad too. That, oh no, I got anxious. Like, it's, the difference is you get anxious. Oh well, I'm anxious. Like, it's not a big deal that you're anxious. You don't think you're not supposed to be anxious. We're not supposed to be happy all the time. We can be anxious and still be at peace, and that's that's what is really interesting as well.
Yeah. Oh, there's so much here that is so helpful and hopeful. I mean, so many things are going through my mind right now, but I've talked about this a lot. But for those of us who have had trauma and we really were really frightened by the experience of what we were feeling, of what was happening. And those things were real, they were happening, but the sensations were so frightening. And many of us, I mean, the core of trauma is the inability to escape. And so we have a memory, we have a brain that has been conditioned. And so it brings that up and kind of seeing it at a higher level with this whole inside out understanding that we're talking about, brings with it a sense of safety that we know in reality, even though it might feel scary, thoughts and feelings change and they move through. Like, I never really knew that, like in a way. And me too, I'm human. I get caught up in what my brain throws at me sometimes. And my lower brain, especially, like the lizard type brain, that's just like, you know, sensations. But then I know that it's going to move and it's going to pass. And that, like I said, it's kind of like this higher understanding, which is so helpful.
Yeah. I mean, and you don't, for me at least, when I'm in it, if something, you know, that we would call bad happens in my life, which, you know, can happen at any time, just like everyone else, like I can get in it and I can tell myself it's just thought and it'll pass, but none of that matters. None of that helps. It doesn't help me. And you know, people say, well, that helps, but it doesn't help when you're in it, because it's supposed to look real. See, and that's important to know too. Like, it's supposed to trick us. Like, that's what this life, this world, you know, this world that we're in is supposed to look outside in, even though it's just like, we have this secret code, you know, by knowing it's really in. And if we don't, it's okay.
Yeah.
I'm not sure where it left off, but I think I was talking about how I still, it looks real in the moment, life. That when bad things happen or seem to happen, it looks real. It looks, it's supposed to look real. We live in, we live in this outside in world that's really inside out, but we have this secret. So it's really just, it's fine. Like if it's like you, when you know this at some level, you just, you go through the ups and the downs and it's all just life. But it doesn't have the power to take you over the same way it used to.
I just want to clarify because it sounds a little bit woo-woo when you're like, life looks real, but it's not really real. So I just wanted to clarify what you mean by that. Maybe you can clarify what you mean by that. I know what you mean by that in terms of, consciousness or being alive brings our thoughts and feelings to life, and so they look, what we're feeling looks real in our head. But can you explain what you mean by that?
Well, there's that, but I do have some woo, I do have woo thoughts on it too, so I don't know if
Well,
I
maybe don't go into the woo-woo because I don't want to confuse people, because I want to stick to really what's basic and what could be really, really helpful and simple for people to grasp. And I really think that whole idea with anxiety and how, in the moment, our feelings are creating our sensations. And like that example you gave with your husband was amazing because you in your head, you thought and then felt this whole story that was created, in your head, but it looked like reality. It felt like reality. And then you kind of realized that that was just kind of self-created.
Yeah. And what, and really what I tell people, and this is, a big part of my book, and this was a big part of my first year or two of understanding this, is look for evidence of how it's your thoughts. Just like that experience with my husband. That's such a simple one that we all have had happen. And if you look for experiences like that, where someone said one word or two words, and you make a big deal out of it, right? And it doesn't matter, even if, like, I mean, I think my husband probably was really mad or whatever, but it doesn't matter what, in that respect, what's real or not. Because people say, but what if they really are mad? Like, it doesn't matter, because our experiences is what we make of it in our head. And there's all kinds of things. I have some blog posts. My blog is what did you do with jill.com, and I have some blog posts where I have some evidence things, like like one time I thought I had to had a tomato at lunch, and there was a tomato stem I had left on the counter. And I when I had gone back in the kitchen, I thought it was a spider or something. And I ah! And then I realized, oh, it's just this tomato stem. But then I thought it was a spider, right? Like a tomato stem's not scary, but a spider is, in my mind. Other people would have said, oh, cool, a spider or whatever. But so that's like a simple example. And go every day, we have hundreds of them, hundreds of examples of how it's thoughts that are creating our experience. We could say it creates our feelings. We can say it creates our experience. I go as far as to say it creates our reality. We have a separate reality from everyone else. So what one person says to me might piss me off, but it might not piss someone else off, or the other way around, because I get less pissed off about what people say. That's just been me, even before I understood this. But like, so when you hear people be like, talk complaining, oh, they said these things and it made me feel bad and blah blah blah. No, we're making ourselves feel bad by it. Like, we don't have to go there. We give meaning. We're meaning making machines. We give meaning to everything that happens. And it's not to put light, to make light of anything bad that really happens to people. Of course, we're gonna feel, we're gonna think it's bad and feel that it's bad. It's not to say that that should be good and we should say, oh, that's good that we were abused. No, of course not. We're human beings, and there are things con definitely considered bad that pretty much every normal person's going to think is bad. So we're not making light of anything that happens to anyone, but it is our own thoughts that are creating how we have experienced it.
Yeah. And it isn't, there's no judgment there. It's not right or wrong in any way. Right. Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I can even think of myself on a, in a personal way, how this would play out is there's been times where I've seen someone that I felt hurt me, where I could see them and interact in a lovely way. And then another time, maybe my thoughts have been, you know, I had a lot of thinking about it. And then the next time I see them, I can feel like I can't stand them. That's just what's happening in my thoughts. Like it's really my thought created reality, which can change depending on whatever's flying through my head in the moment and what I'm, you know, going with. So, yeah.
And you know what? One, something else that's so useful and helpful with this understanding is when the more we see it for ourselves, like that's the most important thing, to see it for ourselves. And the more evidence we seek and the more we know it's true, then we're able to have so much more compassion for other people. Like that when someone does say something that's, you know, kind of rude or seemingly mean, like we, rather than reacting negatively because of it hurts us, we can see, oh, that person must be having a bad day. That person must be dealing with a lot of thoughts. I wouldn't want to be in their head right now. You know, understanding that everybody is feeling their thoughts in the moment. Mm-hmm, and that's why they're saying stupid ass things to us, you know, like they wouldn't be saying those things if they, you know, so.
And you know, I can so relate to that when it comes to even, you know, my own trauma. I remember thinking as a child, I was seeing the same situation as, you know, my own parent, but they were listening to whatever was going through their head in the moment, and which seemed real because we feel our thinking. And I was seeing the same thing completely different. So we were having two different realities of the same thing. But that's just the human experience, right?
Right. And if you can, as somebody who's gone through that, see it from newer eyes now, you know, then it will, I imagine, have less effect on you now because you say, well, yeah, I mean that, you know, look what happened to them and, you know, look what they were going through. And yeah, that was bad that they did these things, but I understand that, you know, how it happened.
Yeah. I think it helps us to just be more compassionate because we understand that, oh, okay. So what looks real to them in the moment looks real to them. There's no convincing. There's no, it's just how we work as human beings. And the same applies for us. You know, sometimes we're going to see things a certain way. And that's just, you know, we can be compassionate to ourselves. That's just how it is. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's really what forgiveness is too. You know, when you can see that in something that had happened in the past, you can much more easily forgive, where some people say, I can't forgive it because it was such, you know, like that's just not right. And, you know, no one should do that. And if I forgive you, then it's saying that it was right, but that's not at all what it is. It's just understanding that, you know, what we were just talking about. And when you forgive, it's for you, not for them. It just drops all kinds of thought from your head and all kinds of conditioned behavior too.
Well, this was a very interesting conversation. So tell us how people can find more about your work, because I know you have a YouTube channel, you've got a book and a website, and just share with us where people can find your stuff.
Yeah, you mentioned the book Victim of Thought, and it's on Amazon. It's in all formats, and I have a blog, whatdidyoudowithjill.com, which I haven't written in lately, but it's a treasure trove of like all my insights. There's nothing left to say. That's why I haven't written, because I've covered every topic imaginable on there.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Jill. Take care.
If you would like to find out more information with regards to my coaching options, you could reach me on my website at www.cbtsdcoach.com. You can visit me on my Facebook and Instagram page at CBTSD Coach.